These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time."
Hello, this is episode 58, and this is Mike and me's Stephen Moffat favourite episodes, which will be The Girl in the Fireplace, which is mine, and Mike's is The 11th Hour.
The Girl in the Fireplace, winding our TARDISes back to 2006, the second series of the RTD era.
You know, it's a historical thing that Doctor Who doesn't do much these days, and it's, you know, it's sort of introducing Mickey, and I think a bit of difference because it's been always, you know, for that season it was always Billy Piper's Rose and the Doctor together, and then they at the end of school reunion added Mickey to the sort of companions, and it's sort of his first episode with this really good historical twist of spaceship wanting Madame de Pompadour as their brain to get the spaceship back together.
And it's, spoilers.
Spoilers
from 12 years ago, but you know, I guess most of you have seen it,
and it's just beautiful. It's shot, I think it was all shot in Versailles, and if you don't know, Versailles is this mammoth castle hunting lodge just outside of Paris where all the kings and queens of France live, basically, and it's humongous. It's, you know, I've been there, and it takes you about a day to go around, and it's just full of the most avant-garde, beautiful splendour, and you can understand why the sort of peasants uprise, because they were having the best of the best, and they weren't.
Yes, Al, if we look at the opening scene, a fantastic camera shot of up in the stars. This really could go anywhere for a few seconds, and then we have the swoop down to the Palace of Versailles, and we meet Renette. We don't know her full name yet, but she's speaking to, I think it's her page man, isn't it? What would they call him in those French aristocratic times?
I'm trying to think of the word. I think you're paid sort of, you know, servant basically speaking to there, I think.
And she's calling out for a certain man. She says to her assistant there, "The only man I've ever loved apart from you." And she says, "I'm your mistress." So perhaps it is the king, is it, this gentleman?
Yeah, that would be probably the Sun King. I think Louis the 14th, I think it was.
And she's looking through a fireplace, asking and saying, "The clock on the mantle is broken. I need you, I need you. Doctor, doctor." And into those swooping Tennant titles.
It's a great...
Yeah, David Tennant, Billy Piper, the old team, back this last week, of course, for Big Finish.
Oh, yeah, that new box set is just fantastic. It would slit in very easy into this season, it would, that new box set Big Finish brought out.
And we get this fabulous CGI shot of the time of a sort of mechanical-looking spaceship, don't we, with the Rose, Mickey, and the Doctor, and this, of course, is Mickey's first trip to outer space.
Yeah, there's some really nice shots in those sort of first scenes. You know, you sort of see the big spaceship, you don't know what it's like till you get on board, really.
The Doctor looks up, sees the Dagmar Cluster, as it's known. And Mickey's really, Noah Clarke's playing this really well, isn't he? He's probably still in that sort of geeky Mickey mindset that we see in the first series and the early part of this series.
Yeah, I think he's still sort of, you know, wanderlust and sort of, oh, this is all new. He hasn't sort of moved into that sort of final stage, you know, in the Cyberman episodes quite yet, I don't think.
And, yes, we have the characters notice the smell of cooking and a fireplace 18th century French appears upon the ship. Quite a bit of mystery already, Al.
Yeah, it looks beautiful, and it's sort of, why would that be there? And it's sort of, you know, the doctor's already asking questions, and there's that sort of very nice thing about the whole cooking thing with its boiler coming up flesh, what we find out later.
Appears to see a young girl, and the commentary for this on the DVD is with David Tennant, Sophia Miles, who plays Renette, and Phil Collinson, the executive producer at the time. And they all sort of make the reference that the child casting is very similar to Sophia Miles at the time, she mentions. Yes, the doctor is now back in Renette's bedroom. She states that it's quite a while later, so we get the idea of these time windows jumping up and down again, and a mysterious clockwork droid appears from under her bed and attacks the doctor, but he's able to stop it. Very creepy design, Al, weren't they? You know, really well done.
Yeah, they are really creepy, those sort of clockwork faces and that one. But it's really interesting, because there's a later shot where the doctor thinks it's really beautiful, and it's very creepy and quite scary to young children, those sort of clockwork faces.
Yes, I'm looking at the Fact of Fiction article, which was in Doctor Who magazine, issue number 434.
Oh, yeah.
And it mentions that originally the androids were to have no faces, their wigs instead creating a shadow under which their smooth clockwork heads could hide. But definitely a good decision to have them in the period makeup, wasn't it?
I think it's the face what makes it scarier, I think.
Yes, and then a call forward, Peter Capaldi's first episode, Deep Breath, we had a clockwork man in that, didn't we?
Oh yeah, and that was really scary, that the sort of clockwork man in a Deep Breath, that was really scary. He just looks so human.
And you get the post-regen forgetting of the doctor, you know, Peter Capaldi doctor says, this reminds me of something, clockwork man, no, it's gone.
Yeah, he's obviously trying to think of these, I think.
And this time the clockwork droid comes back through the fireplace with the doctor to the ship 3,000 years later in space. And he's able to blast it, freeze it. And Mickey sort of says, ice gun, humorously. And the doctor just turns around and says, no, fire extinguisher.
I know, it's a nice little line, that is.
The doctor's wondering what this clockwork droid is all about at the time. Moving the plot along nicely. Any sort of elements you can recognise from what's happened and what we've seen in Moffat's stories since, Al? Any sort of regular things coming up already in this early script?
I think it has a nice pace, and I think there's more cohesiveness from the first two, you know, Moffat episodes, you know, the Russell T. Davies in season one. I think these have more of the sort of, you know, things are going to happen, he sets the thing up, and that's what he normally does, I think.
He goes through the fireplace again and meets Renette as an adult now. As a nice bit of a humorous flirtation between them, he's wondering who this girl is, and then he suddenly pulls the realisation into his head.
Oh, definitely, some great little lines there. And apparently that's the same dress that Helen Mirren wore in The Crown, in The Queen, apparently.
All right, which version of The Queen was that?
The Helen Mirren one, which is the one from the film, the Stephen Frears film.
Oh, is that about Tony Blair and the Diana?
Yeah, that one.
Yes, and then we get the lovely playfulness of Tennant's doctor speaking to one of her courtesans, saying, I'm the doctor, I just snogged Madame de Pompadour.
Yeah, well, he works out it's her, because he gets to see her surname, and works out it's Renée's Prosson, which is Madame de Pompadour.
He's certainly going for the gleefulness there, isn't he? And at the time, you know, we're just 10 years on from the first controversial kiss of the McGann doctor, but certainly David Tennant, perhaps not so much Eccleston, but David Tennant's all about the kissing, isn't he?
Oh, totally. There's tons of it in the David Tennant. And that's more sort of bouncy, sort of fun doctor, and sort of more Patrick Troughton. I doubt Patrick Troughton would have kissed any of the companions or anything like that. But it's that sort of more bouncy, frivolous doctor, I think, with Tennant. And it's so good.
Not in those days, Jamie, no.
No.
Not good old Pat. Yes, and then we have Doctor Who doing subversion and humour really well. Very Douglas Adams. We find out that one of the Queen's horses has come back through the time window. The time fireplace, should we call it.
That's great, the horse bit. It's like, you know, why never do you need a horse in space?
And to increase the reference to Douglas Adams, we get the horse being christened Arthur, don't we? Arthur Dent.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then Mickey on the ship sees an eyeball appearing on a stalk, giving him a scan, and that's the first sort of clue as to what the parts these aliens are looking for to power up their spaceship with.
Yeah, this is when it starts, you know, doing the sort of normal Stephen Moffat, getting a little bit more, it's not so frothy and nice, it's sort of getting a little bit more darker, I think. And those little bits where you see the eyeball, and then it, I think it goes soon to when you see the, you know, the heart being pumped by electronics. It's just a little bit more nasty, you know, it's a little bit more evil, and it's still great fun.
Yeah, he strips away the layers slowly, doesn't he? I think we mentioned before, possibly a little bit more paint by numbers, but with extra layers, the empty child, the Doctor dances. And this one, we're not really into the totally more complicated scripts at times that he's produced a show on her.
Yeah, I think this is still very early Stephen Moffat, where he hasn't got sort of collided as showrunner. We can still do really good things when he's showrunner.
Absolutely, Al. And then we have a lovely little scene with Sophia Miles and a guest actress, with the Doctor hiding behind a fence, supposedly in Versailles, but apparently filmed in Tredegar House in Newport, which has turned up in The End of Time and a few Torchwood episodes since, I think.
Well, it's a, I'll just go there, it's a beautiful building. You wouldn't know that wasn't Versailles.
No, no, it, a lot of Wales, and depends on the way you film it, and other parts of the UK do fill in well for these locations.
I think the problem is that Versailles is a completely working tourist building, so it's a very awkward place to film at, I think.
Yeah, there must be serious bureaucratic issues for getting in there, I think, a lot of red tape.
It's an always interesting one, because all sort of historical places in France are tourist sites, so there's always people there. I know that was the problem that Merlin had shooting in a castle in France as well as this.
And the actress playing one of the friends of Madame du Pompadour is Angela Colby, who later went on to play Gwen in Merlin, who was Morgana's handmaiden.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I thought I recognised her.
Yes, a fabulous actress. A lovely little banterous scene between her and Sophia Miles. So we go back, and Rose and Mickey find a window, and they manage to look upon France in the 17th century, and the Doctor joins them as they watch the King meet Renette for the first time, and it's the night of the Yew Tree Ball.
Rose slowly working out what the, you know, the Doctor will have fun with anybody.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, is she really in the sort of puppy dog's eyed spirit that she is at the end of the series by now? I think she's a bit more restrained, perhaps because Mickey's around as well in this episode.
A little bit. It's still like, oh, you know, I still really love the Doctor more than you, Mickey, I think.
Bit of a rift going between them at the moment, isn't there?
Definitely, definitely. In that episode, it's the whole, you know, I think the Doctor's still fantastic.
Yeah, so now a clockwork man comes into action in the corner of the room. The Doctor moves the mirror out of the way, freezes the android again with a blast from a fire extinguisher.
It always seems to work.
And it does start to power up again this time. And we get an explanation of how the spaceship was caught in an ion storm.
Oh, yeah, that's a good bit there. That's a good explanation.
Yeah, so more layers being stripped back by the Moff there.
Definitely. It's a very, very, you know, I think he's got faster in the later years. He's quite subtly done this, I think.
And Renette realises that the spaceship is looking for her, and she orders it, the android, to teleport back.
Yeah, get rid of them, basically, because they won't do whatever the Doctor does, so they do whatever she does.
To Rose and Mickey being captured by the androids at this point, and that does the good old Doctor Who trick of splitting up various parts of, which is a fairly large ensemble for Doctor Who in this episode, four main characters, really.
Well, yeah, there is quite a few characters. I think that works of splitting, you know, the Doctor up with Madame de Pompadour and Mickey and Rose being together. So I think that's a good idea, because it can get a bit convoluted sometimes.
Sorry, going back to this lovely scene between David Tennant and Sophia Miles.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
Talking about a bit of a mind reading going on by the Doctor.
Oh, yeah, because he does the sort of, you know, the Doctor Who trick of looking into everyone's heads, and so he can sort of see everything about him without knowing how he does it, really.
Such a wonderful eye, isn't it? A door open, maybe step through in either direction.
Oh, it's brilliant. There's some really good lines in this.
Who knows what the Doctor's got in that old head of his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so those two, and apparently they did end up dating in real life, didn't they, before David met Georgia. So,
oh, yeah, they did, didn't they?
So well, I think you can really see the spark on screen as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's in it. Well, you know, she's very nice. I love that line, isn't it? Like, I love that line when he goes, you've had some real cowboys in here, when he looks at her head.
Yes, and then she turns it around with the whole lonely little boy on Gallifrey moment.
Yeah, that whole scene is really, really well written, I think.
Yes, and then we go from gentle, sentimental scene to a little bit of peril with Rose tied up and the Doctor doing a very good drunken act. What did you make of Tennant's performance?
I love that bit. When
in this part of the episode.
I love that when he wanders in, you know, singing "I Would Have Danced All Night," he looks drunk and it's...
I think I just invented the banana daiquiri.
Banana daiquiri about 100 years earlier, those horrible things.
It's yours to blame, Doctor.
Yeah, it's yours to blame. Banana and strawberry daiquiris.
Yeah, carrying the glass of red wine in his hand, of course, and it is up to be multi-grade anti-oil.
As he throws at them, and then we get to see this sort of love for love for technology. I think that Doctor has. He gets all beautiful, and then goes, "Well, I will still kill you."
Yeah, turning from lightness to dark is not all the best. Performers who played the role have done that, and it'd be interesting to see how Jodie can do it.
I think she'll be great at doing that sort of bit, because she can be absolutely bonkers 1 minute in the roles he does, and then really serious. I think it'll be very good.
Yes, and the Doctor makes an important discovery, realises the ship is 37 years old and they are waiting for Annette to hit exactly the same age to make sure she is compatible. And as you move on again, the Doctor tries to shut down the windows, but because there's one android left in 18th century France, he's unable to do that at this time.
Yeah, that's a good sort of, bit to make him go back to care about Madame Pompadour, I think. It's a good trick, that little bit where they leave one there so they can't close all the windows.
Yes, so got him in a little bit of a corner.
Corners are always good.
Showing her strength, Madame de Pompadour, reminding all the artisans or the courtesans within her court that, this is France and they must do what they can.
Exactly.
And they go, kneel her on the floor, looking to decapitate her, or to kill her at the time. She looks up bravely, saying, "You think I fear you, but I do not fear you even now. You are the nightmare of my childhood."
Great lines in this episode.
And we come forwards towards a controversial little bit. It just seems to me, can we tell how much the CGI has aged in this moment?
Oh, is that the bit with the horse going through the glass window?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because that whole room is stunning. It's basically a room of... at Versailles, solid glass, Venetian glass windows. And I went in on a sunny day and you get blinded, basically. So, and it does look... It looks fine, still. I agree. It does look a little bit CGI dated, I think.
And did you say you thought they had filmed it in Versailles? But I'm pretty sure, there's such as the skills of set makers.
I'm pretty sure that the bit with the glass, I never smashed one because they're hundreds of years old and they're worth about a couple of million each glasses, but I believe the bit before you see the horse jump through the window is actually in the mirrored hall at Versailles.
Al, I've actually got a correction to make here. You said the Helen Mirren had worn the dress in the film The Queen. It was The Madness of King George she wore it in.
I knew it was one of them.
Because The Queen is the one set in the Tony Blair era, isn't it?
That's the one. I knew it was one.
Set far sooner.
It looks stunning. But I believe the shot before the horse goes through the window is actually Versailles. Then that is green screen. What does look a little bit dated now, I agree.
It does look just a wee bit dated now, yes, of course.
It looks a little bit dated. It's still got that great line, but, I'm a lord of time, which is great. But I do agree, it looks a little bit dated after 11 years, nearly.
And interestingly enough, the fact of fiction in Doctor Who magazine says, in an alternative draft, the Doctor leaps through the mirror himself, while a horse sneaks off to the TARDIS to relieve itself.
The horse, even on a horse, is great. I think that works better.
It may have worked well either way.
Yeah, it would have been fun. It would be more sort of comedy, maybe. But I think we've had better horse comedy since this, though.
Yes, indeed.
There's a great bit in the Matt Smith era of horses.
And the Zygon being the horse when he thinks it's Queen Elizabeth and David.
Oh, that was fun as well.
The Doctor points out to androids, now the mirror is smashed, there's no way back for anybody. Presuming that he's trapped there, and he has another lovely conversation with Sophia Miles about staying there with her and staring up at the stars.
That bit's lovely. Well, the bit I always think is a bit of, we've got to get the Doctor back, we'll probably get to in a bit, is where the fireplace still works, even though it's being moved. And you're thinking, well, how would it still work if it's being moved?
Yes, any scientists with us, give us the explanation for that.
Yeah, definitely. Because that's the only bit I think in this beautiful episode is a bit that wouldn't work. That's the only bit I have
I wouldn't say despondency of the Doctor, about how he's going to take the slow path in life now. He believes he's trapped
here. Yeah, well, you know, they have sort of gone into that. You know, like they went into that with the Beast Below when he gets stuck on there. You know, they discuss it all.
And, the Doctor has his sort of get-out clause. We think it's a get-out, but there's another twist at the end, saying that when the fireplace was moved by Renette, its link to the ship was broken and it was therefore offline when the mirror was smashed. The link between the France and the ship might still be active, and that is proved to be the case. And
yeah,
off he runs all carefree and happy, not knowing what's to come. Off he runs, doesn't he, to see
Mickey
and Rose again.
There's that great, really sort of upsetting twist for the Doctor coming, and I think that's really well shot. That whole sort of, you know, the barge sea going down the Seine, you know, the Seine from Versailles. It's really beautiful, I think.
Yes, the actor, of course, playing King Louis. He, you know, he's very subtle in the performance, isn't he? You know, Tennant's very happy that he's going to be seeing her again, and then we see the funeral cortege going down
outside, he gets
towards
there,
Paris.
It's a nice bit of sadness, I think.
Suffered tuberculosis, the real Madame de Pompadour. Died on the 15th of April, 1764. 42 at the time of her death.
Just don't live long. I didn't live long back then. 42 is quite old.
And quite unusually, really. Another sort of Douglas Adams reference, the number 42.
Yeah, definitely. There's lots of Douglas Adams. You know, Steve Moffat's a Douglas Adams fan, and there's lots of little tweaks to it, I think, in this episode.
Yeah, we get a return to the TARDIS then, don't we? He's given her the letter. Mickey rather generously guides Rose away, so the Doctor gets time on his own to read this letter. And I'm just reminded of the TARDIS year.
I think it ends well.
I'm just reminded of the old TARDIS set year. I think it's definitely a change between the sort of green palette background in the first series, Eccleston, and there's more sort of a bluish tint to it here.
Yeah, it's definitely got a sort of more blue sort of Rundle filter, hasn't it? It's all more rocky filter.
And then we get the lovely words of Renette's letter. You know, she hopes to see her lonely angel again one last time, and that definitely ties in with the Doctor at this time, believing he was the last Time Lord.
Yeah, this is great. I love that. There's a very nice trick with that letter, and there's what you see at the same time.
Absolutely, Al. And then we get the one last twist towards the end, the pull-out shot towards the spaceship. And it's called Madame de Pompadour.
All connected in the end, which is a typical Stephen Moffat sort of script where everything, what, there you go on a journey, everything connects at the end.
Nicely tied up in a bow there, really.
Very nice ending. It's sort of, you know, being on the journey, and probably learn a little bit because it's historical. And I think it's a lovely episode. I think it's beautifully shot.
So round up, Al. Why this one is your favourite? You know, are you going to give it a score, a big old score of 10, or?
I think it's one of my favourites because it's got a really good story. It's beautifully shot. There's just so much good fun in it, and it's like, you know, romp all the way through. And then you get those beautiful bits with Madame de Pompadour and David Tennant's Doctor. And I just think it gets very close to. I think I do like it a lot. I think I will give it a 10 because it is just really good. It's a good Doctor Who story.
Some reason it's not one I always really want to go back and rewatch, but once I do watch it. Rewatch it, I'd say it's definitely a 10 too. Obviously Moffat is really going for it here. He didn't know he's going to be a future showrunner. This was his first opportunity, or second after The Empty Child, to write for this new Doctor, and he's put it in a historical setting again and just measured it up so well. Something that could be a bit of a almost a cheesy idea of taking, you know, human parts to power a spaceship, but he's given it a lot of depth, some great words, some great performances, so many great layers. So I'd go for a 10 as well, I think.
Yeah, it's just, I like the slow burn, and I like how it sort of doesn't give you everything, and I think that sometimes in the later Moffat period can be the problem, but I really think it's well worth, that. I think there's lots of well worth things in season 2 to watch, but I think it's one of the really good standout episodes of season 2.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Alex, and this is Who's News on the 18th of December. Well, first thing, as everything is getting close to Twice Upon a Time, is Joe Wiley, Radio 2 presenter, doing a 3-hour documentary on the 21st of December, which is this Thursday. It's a complete behind the scenes of the last of Peter Capaldi's era and the Christmas episode with lots of nice interviews. So it'll be available on Radio 2 Live on Thursday night or on the BBC Radio Player afterwards. There is also being released a bit of scenery and stuff from behind the scenes of the last Peter Capaldi episode, Twice Upon a Time. And of course, the episode will be on BBC One at 5:30 on Christmas Day. And we can't wait to see how Jodie Whittaker regenerates into her Doctor. Well, if you're like me, a mammoth fan of BigFinish.com's Jaco and Lightfoot, Amber, then you'll be lucky to know that there is one final episode coming out. It will hopefully explain everything. It's out in May and has been titled Jaco and Lightfoot Forever. Well, now we must talk about Mike's favourite episode, which is the 11th Hour, Matt Smith's first episode. So, why do you like it so much?
Oh, it's just got everything. Rip-roaring pace. I think I want to look at the context this was brought in as well. We had the massively popular David Tennant bowing out with RTD at the end of 2009. So much pressure on the youngest ever Doctor. I'd seen Matt Smith in a few things. I think he was in Ruby in the Smoke around about Christmas 2006 with Billy Piper. Small role in that. There was a young political drama called Party Animals he was in, and he certainly had a bit of charisma about him, but there was a lot of uncertainty at this time, and I was happy to say he managed to blow a lot of people away in that first hour. A very good script by Moffat, really sort of defining and getting into the new era. Excellently paced. Just had everything, really. Had the wonderful Karen Gillan. I'll go into that later on. She's one of my favourite companions for a lot of reasons. Yeah, that's my thoughts, really, Al. What did you make of it from the off? I'm just starting up the DVD now, and that fabulous opening scene where he's being dragged over London. We saw the TARDIS crashing at the end of the RTD era, End of Time.
This is a really fantastic shot, that first. These first sort of really... pacey shots this episode are really great fun. Yeah, like you, I think this episode is fantastic. Well, I have to admit, when Matt Smith came in, it took me about a year before I really liked his Doctor. And I just don't know why I didn't get it, but I do now. And I think this sort of episode is fantastic because it has one of the sort of really funniest, but really clever regen sort of scenes, I think.
Yes, and we go into the new title sequence, Al. What did you make of that change from the Tennant era? And a slightly sort of more high-pitched version of the theme tune, which I do like now, particularly in comparison to the awful Capaldi one.
Yeah, I think the titles are really fun, and I agree. The music is a lot better than the Peter Capaldi era. I'm hoping we get something much more fun and different for the Jodie Whittaker period, because it's a completely brand new composer, not announced yet, which is interesting. But yeah, I agree, the titles are really fun, the music sort of really has that sort of pace and sort of says you're getting somebody completely different.
And into the fabulous tracking shot by Adam Smith, the director, the spinning toy windmill, over to the shed, over to the swing in Amy Pond's garden. So many bright, vivid colours, aren't there? And we get a young girl, Caitlin Blackwood, praying to Santa. Was a bit controversial at the time. Do you think that's a good bit of Moffat's humour there, Al?
Oh, definitely. Like you, I love that shot. You see the windmill and it all goes through her garden and he's the shed and it's her sitting there. And it's just really, it's probably very, anarchic Stephen Moffat joke there. But I think it's brilliant. That first shot sort of says so much about the sort of creepy house that, Amelia Pond lives in.
Yes, and she's praying about the crack in her wall, which becomes pivotal to the whole Matt Smith era eventually, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sort of whole sort of, Stephen Moffat obviously having an idea about it and then keep it sort of bubbling nicely for 3 years is quite impressive.
I just want to say how really good Caitlin Blackwood is in this episode.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go to, I think it was her first convention appearance about 3 or 4 years ago. Star Fury events Return to the 11th Hour. Yeah, she's a very chatty young lady. Spoke about her experiences of filming this story, how well she got on with Matt, and I think that really comes across in these early scenes, the whole fish custard and everything.
Oh, that bit's just fantastic. I can never remember. He's actually related to Karen Gillan, isn't he?
Some sort of second cousin that they hadn't actually met until, I think, the premiere of this story. They hadn't actually met in life until the premiere. They do look similar.
That's why it really worked.
Yeah, you know, I think Caitlin's probably getting towards being an adult now, isn't she? And probably.
Well, she must be by now, because this is, about six years ago now.
8 years ago now, well, 2010, yeah. So it's coming up to eight in the spring. And we get this wonderful sort of Murray Gold sort of almost turning to the synth rather than the brass he had in the RTD era. As we get Matt throwing the grappling hook out of the TARDIS, and I think that's such a great entrance for an incarnation.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? In looking sort of really dishevelled and wet and sort of falling off the TARDIS. I think there's some really good new bits of music that Murray Gold comes up through for this sort of first year of the new Doctor.
And certainly all the new series Doctors. Can't remember that many child actors really in the classic series, but all the new series Doctors do have a great rapport with kids, don't they?
Oh, they do. I think it seems to be, you know, part of the Doctor Who world now, but, you know, the Doctors always get on with children.
And I think this is probably these opening scenes where Moffat got his description of Matt's Doctor as a mad giraffe from, because he's playing the slapstick and the comedy with the food and falling out of the TARDIS earlier on so well.
Oh, I just think this whole slapstick and comedy bits with the whole food and not liking anything are just brilliant. It's sort of really fast, you know, it's really fast, it's really pacey. That whole sort of bit with the fist custard probably doesn't take up more than a couple of minutes.
Apparently a great deal of fandom has tried fish custard and it's not too bad, even though in the episode it was actually marzipan. Pieces made to look like fish fingers with custard, I believe.
I've never tried it, it just sounds so disgusting, but I expect it does go quite well because of fish with a sort of creamy sugar, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, Al, absolutely. And he makes these some great lines when he's describing the process to her, isn't he? He's saying, "I'm still cooking," when we see the regen energy coming out of him.
Oh yeah, there's some brilliant shots of the hand of the regen energy, and he's still, you know, he still doesn't know who's going to be, and the TARDIS isn't working because of the same reasons. It's just a whole bit here. You get so much information about regeneration, which I'm not too sure you had that before this.
Yeah, we get the assertiveness, don't we? Saying, you know, we got no time to lose. He immediately turns around, walks into the tree, falls over and says, "Oh, the steering's a bit off."
I know, there's just those great pratfalls what Matt Smith can do so well. We got there.
Yeah, we got the wonderful scenes with the eggs, haven't we? The bacon, oh, everything else.
They're great. I just think there's a bad scene in this episode. I think there's everything is used so well. And I think the really bad thing is when I watched it the first time, I didn't like it at all.
No, absolutely, Al. You know, I can understand parts of it, perhaps, you weren't too enamoured with, but we get some wonderful scenes. I think one of the most beautiful things Moffat's ever written and been filmed by the director is when Emilia is packing a suitcase to go and get in the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah, that bit is so what a child would do. She's just sitting there waiting for him to come back, which he does eventually, and it's just brilliantly shot.
And she's just basically filling up. I love the fact she's filling her suitcase up with absolutely anything, isn't she? It's just such a childlike thing to do.
Yeah, you would. You think, "Oh, I need that. And she just gets a whole suitcase and then gears out into the garden, sits there, and just waits. So, sort of, you know, the Doctor will come back.
Yeah, and a pretty good decision that we never really see her disappointment. It sort of cuts away as she thinks the TARDIS is coming to get her.
Really, there's a lot of hope in that beautiful shot scene with her. There's no sort of, the TARDIS won't come back for her.
And then we get the whole setup of, we see a character called Prisoner Zero, or we don't know it's Prisoner Zero yet, in the hospital. And we meet young Rory, who is very bumbling and very different to the strong character he became later on.
I just think it's a really interesting, you know, because I don't think Arthur Darvill done much. But when you see him like in Legends of Tomorrowland, he's a completely different actor to how he is in this sort of first episode.
And the Doctor meets a strange-looking policewoman with long red hair, and he's chained to a radiator. And we get the wonderful revelation that this is Amy, and it's been 12 years.
Yes, the whole sort of cricket bat incident when she hits her over the head, it's great. It's so well shot, and then that, you know, she looks absolutely stunning, Karen does in that shot.
And then we get introduced to the apparently Gloucestershire village of Ledworth, which is filmed in Whitchurch in Cardiff.
It's a really sort of typical little village. I love the shots of that. It's very, you know, it does look very much like a Gloucester village.
Prisoner Zero has taken over the airwaves. They say an Ice Cream Man's radio is mentioning that... No, it's the Atraxi, actually, isn't it, who are looking for Prisoner Zero.
Yeah, it's the Atraxi, because he's escaped.
And then we get this wonderful tracking shot. I don't know why we didn't see more of it, where the Doctor seems to think he's missed something. And we get the wonderful tracking shot all through the village towards people on their phones.
Yeah, it's a really interesting shot. It's sort of a bit compressed, unfortunately. It would have been nicer if it was maybe a minute or two longer.
And then we go and meet Victor Meldrew's wife, don't we, Margaret?
We do, Annette Bedlin.
I remember reading a lot of internet forums at the time saying, oh, this is actually older Amy, there's going to be sort of timey-wimey-ness with this thing happening. But as with a lot of fan theories, she never appears again in Doctor Who.
She doesn't, she's in that one episode and that's it, and she's brilliant, she's so funny.
Absolutely, and now we get the revelation that's exactly why Amy is wearing this policewoman's costume, and
yes.
Done rather humorously with Annette. What's her name? Annette Crosby, isn't it?
Annette
Crosby's character asking her. Sometimes she's a nurse. Sometimes she's a. She's certain other things. A nun. And then we find out why. And the Doctor, in his way, asks her what a stripogram is.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you think he's lived for so many thousand years, you think he would have noticed before.
He wouldn't even notice, though, somebody as good-looking as Karen Gillan as that.
Absolutely, dude. And then we meet Amy's friend Jeff, who had a laptop. Oh, sorry, have I skipped ahead a bit here now?
I don't think so.
I know, they go back into the centre of Ledworth, don't they?
Yeah.
And Amy's still rather frosty that this guy has appeared again.
Yeah. Explains all about her psychotherapist.
And this whole idea, Al, of a duck pond, did you understand why they were disappearing? Was it to do with a crack later on in the series?
I think it's something to do with what the prisoner serial character is trying to eat them or something. Like, I think there's a like, little reference to them.
Yeah, of course, we get Rory disappearing later in the season, don't we?
Yeah, when they whole dream capture bit.
And Amy decides, with her pair of handcuffs from the stripogram job, to lock the Doctor's tie in a car.
It doesn't work.
And then tells the gentleman to go and have a cup of tea whose car it is.
Yes. There's some great bits, and I just think, you know, there's some lovely shots in that bit.
Scooting on again a little bit here. And then we return to Amy's friend Jeff in the flat. Yes, there's an interesting laptop moment here where Matt Smith was actually injured on set, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was. I can't remember what happened now.
And he holds a sonic. Blows up, doesn't it, in the charge?
Oh, yeah, because
the charge went off too early.
Are we too early?
No, I'm saying that I think the charge went off too early. When
there's those bits where the street lights explode, don't, because of the sonic screwdriver, and I think one of those went off too early.
Yes, and the Doctor decides he needs a mobile phone signal to get a signal out to the universe, to the Atraxi, informing them that Prisoner Zero is indeed on planet Earth, so he goes back. He goes back to Jeff, and we get I think Tom Hopper is the actor, and we get a good comedy scene out of that, don't we?
That's some great bits there with Patrick Moore, and that is just hilarious.
And it's a great setup of the fact that's gone through the Moffat era, that the Doctor, any sort of normal man, can help the Doctor and just become extraordinary on any given day.
Oh, totally, and that whole bit, you know, where Jeff's left to sort of put the panel of experts together, and it's just really good and a nice outlook that anybody can help the Doctor, really.
And Stephen, you can't help yourself, because you have Patrick Moore trying to flirt with
Annette Crosby.
Sadly departed now, Patrick Moore, isn't he, since
his
episode?
Yeah, unfortunately, but he was great.
Great astronomer here in the UK. And a lovely line as the Doctor runs back out into Ledworth Green to Tom, delete your internet history.
Yeah, which is, you know, very funny, but sort of an interesting sort of, again, Moffat outlook on politics, maybe.
It's the whole believability of it, isn't it? Because this Tom Hopper's pretty decent-looking bloke, you know, pretty muscly-looking guy. Would he really be that much of a nerd?
No, he is pretty beefed up, isn't he? So you don't know with that one.
Yeah, because he's been in Game of Thrones since, so.
Of course he has, yeah, and he's pretty beefed up in that.
Yes, pretty much so. And of course, they get the humour about the Doctor saying earlier on, describing him to Rory as the good-looking one.
Yeah, I think there is lots of humour in this.
The Doctor decides to make a beeline for the hospital.
Yeah, after, you know, finding... Doesn't he find out from Rory, but, you know, that he's got all the photos on his camera phone, hasn't he? And I love that little scene. That must take hours with him and Half Dog, where they say the same lines at the same time.
Oh, yes, of course. And Prisoner Zero has taken on various forms in the hospital, and one of them being her only appearance in Doctor Who so far, Olivia Colman.
Oh, really? Is that... Which one's... Is that...
She's the mother of the twin girls, you know, who are all
speaking. Oh, she's the mother of the twin girls, yeah. Because
Prisoner Zero is speaking through them.
It's Nina Wadia as the nurse, isn't it?
Yeah, so we get Olivia Colman, and I'm reminded of the start of the Five-ish Doctors, where she's with Sean Pertwee. And she says, they haven't asked me to be in the 50th anniversary yet, and I'm in bloody everything.
But I now see there's another, you know, she's now going to be in the third season of The Crown, isn't she?
Yes, fantastic actress. And sometimes you wonder, I'm not going to use the word wasted, but do you expect more some of these guest stars at times, Al, in Doctor Who?
I think sometimes they can get a bit wasted because, you know, they're really good actors. They could probably do anything.
And of course the Doctor has a bit of to and fro-ing with the Atraxi here, doesn't he?
Oh, there's some good lines there between Matt and the Atraxi.
And yes, we get the revelation that Prisoner Zero is talking back to the Doctor, suggesting, you know, how on earth can the Atraxi find me on Earth? Well, I've just basically uploaded so many different photos of you, so... From the Doctor's sneering and disdain earlier about the human race looking through the end of the world through a camera phone, he's actually used that to his advantage.
Oh, definitely. And I think there's, you know, because I think we were just getting into the era of, you know, technology, weren't we, with this episode? So
earlier on the episode, Amy still has a phone with buttons on it and with a pad on it. You know, I'd noticed that.
Oh, yeah, because she does, doesn't she? And then, you know, by the end of the episode, you've got the normal smartphone, haven't you?
Yeah, because when this was filmed, autumn 2009, I think the first iPhone was out in 07, wasn't it? January 07?
Yeah. So
we were onto the iPhone 2 or 3 by then, I think.
The iPhone, I think that's when I had my first iPhone, the iPhone 3G, and that was the first sort of smartphone everybody had.
Back in the day now, Al, it's terrible how quickly it's all moved on, isn't it?
I know. But it's, you know,
I bet they weren't offering the contracts they were now. I bet you had to pay a good grand or whatever for one by then.
Oh, I bet they were. I'm thinking how much mine was, a good amount back then. It was a good £400 or £500.
But anyhow, the Doctor heroically sends the Atraxi on his way and then immediately calls them back again.
Yeah, I never know what all this sort of we get to explain. But you think there's a little bit of a mistake there, calling them back.
Yes, I suppose he wants to make sure. Well, it does give us the chance to have a great introduction to his Doctor, and he walks through the hotel. He walks through the hospital, getting all the different elements of clothes. And there's a bit of a callback to the McGann TV movie there, isn't there? In a hospital, getting your outfit there.
Oh, definitely. There's that great bit where Rory's expecting, you know, her to look away, and she's liking his body so much he keeps looking as he gets into the final costume.
Really pushed aside in this first series before he comes through later on, doesn't he? Series 6 and 7, Rory.
Rory's more used as a sort of comedy foil more in this season than later seasons.
And this is probably my favourite in the new era. Introduction to a Doctor. In terms of the Atraxi putting this large hologram in the sky, and he asks these questions, doesn't he? And the final one is, ask yourself, is this world defended?
And the answer is yes.
So is he actually talking to the Atraxi then, isn't he? I don't know why.
Yeah, he's talking to the...
Why he's got the issue with them, because they want to invade as well, do they?
I think he's talking to the Atraxi prisoner, you know, the person who's got Prisoner Zero by them, because it's that big eye in the sky thing, isn't there?
So you speak to them by them, and we get the whole 10 previous incarnations before him.
Yeah, which is a very good thing. And I think the music's fantastic in this whole scene. I think that's the first time you get the I Am the Doctor theme, I think, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. One of Murray's very greatest there, I think, Al.
Oh, it is fantastic. It is definitely one of his best.
Fabulous sweeping score, and the Atraxi turns on its eye, and sails away to the stars, doesn't it?
It does, it goes.
And Amy goes looking for him, and he's run off again to see his new TARDIS, returning what turns out to be 2 years later, and he's really trying their patience here.
I have to say, that is one of that inside of the TARDIS is one of the most beautiful ones they've done in the new era, I think.
It's just the reveal, isn't it? And the sort of teasing about where he's going to go in the stars in that final scene when he's trying to get her to persuade her to travel with him.
I know, this is really well written, and sort of she's sort of, I think she wants to travel with him, and, you know, and then she does by the end of the episode, and it's sort of that. That's another great shot where you see what's going to happen to Amy, basically.
And such a clever line, isn't it? I am definitely a madman in a box.
Oh, yes, it's brilliant. It just sums up that whole Matt Smith era of the Doctor. He is completely bonkers nearly half the time of that, those three seasons.
Yeah, I think we went from very organic in terms of the way the TARDIS was designed to steampunk, really, didn't we?
We did. We had all that sort of very nice sort of glass and beautiful bits of the TARDIS by the end of this, I think.
Where would you rate them then, especially the new series consoles, Al? Where would you rate Eccleston's, Smith's first, and the Capaldi one now, which was Smith's second as well?
I'd probably go, well, I like Eccleston's, it's really, because it's the first thing we saw in the new era, but I personally, if I had to say the whole way, I love Paul McGann's the most, but we didn't see it enough. But I think in the new era, it'd be Chris's first, then Matt's, because it's beautiful, then Capaldi's, then Tennant's, I think.
Yeah, in specific order, I'd say probably Eccleston's first for me.
Because we saw it recently, and it still looks really good now, doesn't it?
We'll have to see where it's going to end up from the experience. I'd probably tie the other two, really. Tie the steampunk one we're watching in the 11th hour and the Capaldi one. They've had a slight bit of difference, haven't they? Had sort of more library books put in the Capaldi era.
I did like that, yeah, because when you in the main conference room, you had the sort of big auntie and lots of books. I did like that.
Yeah, fabulous one for me, 11th hour. I'm just basically definitely going to give it a 10 because of the pressure that was on it. You know, you really had to start this series with a whiz-bang, and it's definitely the type of tone and the pressure that Chibnall's going to be facing this autumn, and I hope we get something equally as good for Season 11, Episode 1.
Well, I will say a 10 for it as well, because I think it's fantastic. Well, as I said, I wouldn't have given that when I first watched it, but I've seen it 3 or 4 times since then. I just think it gets better every time. But I think with Chris Chibnall, it's going to be very interesting, because, you know, Stephen Moffat had support still. He had half of the Russell T. Davis era team there, where with Chris Chibnall, it's all completely brand new.
Yes, Al, absolutely. So, a 10 from both of us. Very good there, mate. On to other media news, things we've seen lately. We both went to the midnight screening of The Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 8, last Wednesday here in the UK. Should we just give our brief thoughts on that, Al?
Yeah, definitely. As I know, you really liked it, and I was a bit in the middle, because I think it works really well in a lot of great, good bits. And, you know, you have to think, you're sitting in the cinema at midnight, which is insanity, what we both did it, and it didn't drag. It was like 2.5 hours went very, very quickly, I thought. So you have to take that into account. But I think there was a few mishits in it, but I think overall, I can't say because people might not have seen it, there are some really great bits. And I think having people back who haven't acted for years, like Mark Cameron, just acting that well is a really good reason to see it. And the new people, Daisy Ridley's fantastic, and Adam Driver's really good. And so I'd say go and see it, but maybe if you can, go and see it twice, because the second watch is meant to be better.
Yeah, you know, I've mentioned it online. I think Mark Hamill could be up for some sort of award on this. I know, like, the Oscars Academy will be a bit stuffy about acting performances in Star Wars, but we've seen in the last few years Sylvester Stallone get a Golden Globe for Creed, so perhaps those awards might look at honouring Mark Hamill for this, you know, such a key character. We're not going to spoil it for people. We're not going to mention spoilers, Al, are you?
Really? No, I've tried avoiding
such an important way to go, you know, and it does really leave you with a lot of questions at the end
as to
where they're going to go in Episode 9 now. You know, it's going to be primarily I won't say any more than just saying primarily it's going to be the younger cast. I think it's primarily going to be the younger cast now, isn't it, Episode 9?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be a way of tidying up in Episode 9 so they can go on to something completely different with the next Seps films, I think.
Not a spoiler here, Al, because unfortunately she passed away in real life, but was it a good send-off for Carrie Fisher?
Yeah, I think the way they sort of did the tidy up on Carrie Fisher, it was very good. I think she is definitely one of the more important people in the film, and her bits are really good.
I think one sort of spoiler we can say is that it was good to see her and Mark Hamill get a scene together again after 34 years now, isn't it? Yeah,
34 years. That one scene, and it starts a joke, goes, oh, you've changed your hair. It was really, really well done. Well, there's a really good twist, what we can't say about that scene, which is really interesting. A
couple of surprise appearances, Al, as well. We got Aid Edmondson himself as a First Order officer, of course.
Oh, he was in it. I was going to ask you that, because I know I'd seen a rumour he was in it. You've got the two princes, you know, Harry and Wills are in it as Star Troopers.
Yeah, Gareth Edwards, who directed Rogue One, was there as well in the trench towards the end on the planet made of salt, which was an interesting idea to bring wasn't it? I think they wanted to have a discrepancy from another either forest planet or a desert planet or an ice planet again.
I know. But there is a very interesting way with a spoiler, because I won't say who. Well, did you notice a certain character, when he's on that salt planet, doesn't leave footprints?
Ah, right. Yes, that's very interesting. And that is sort of explained then, isn't it? But
yeah, a certain character, we can't say who, but he doesn't. They don't leave any foot. When you see them, they don't leave any footprints. So we should have sort of really seen it coming.
Very well spotted, Al, but you will only know what we're talking about when you go see it, folks. When you go see it, folks.
Oh, it's really... I think it's... really good, and I think it's very, very close to being as good as Empire Strikes Back, but I think Empire still gets ahead a little bit. That's still my favourite Star Wars film. And I have a feeling
on future watches it may get dragged down by the middle act on the casino planet. I think it may get dragged down a bit by that.
That is what people have been complaining about on forums, that what they could have got rid of that casino act bit. Though it did bring in a very good character. I think the Ono Del Toro character is quite fun.
Wasn't sure, see, because I was just going to mention what we said about Olivia Colman possibly not seeing enough of her in Doctor Who. Was that the same case with him? You know, he was a little underused, I felt.
I think, yeah, well, this is the whole thing, that, you know, because they brought in three, and everybody doesn't know this spoiler, they brought in three new characters, which I expect Ryan Johnson will add to his own films he's doing, the trilogies he's doing. But the problem was, the three characters didn't really get enough film space, in my opinion.
No, I thought Laura Dern was absolutely superb, and it really has been her year, because she's been in Twin Peaks and another series, I think, or a film with Nicole Kidman this year.
Is that the one who plays Rose?
Yeah, Holdo, isn't it? No, Holdo, the...
Holdo, she was great as well. She was great.
And it is Kelly Marie Tran, isn't it? Vietnamese actress who plays Rose.
Yeah, she's very good as well. But I just don't think either three of those, and they really, you know, fantastic to bring new characters in, will work really well. But I just don't think those three characters had enough screen time.
Score it out of 10, Al. Last Jedi.
Last Jedi, I think I need to watch it. It'll probably go up a bit, because people have gone up a bit. I'd say 8.5.
I'd say 8.5 or 9 for me, I think.
I think people, apparently say on the second watch, it will go up a percentage, because everybody's watched it who gave like an 8 on the YouTube, because lots of YouTube videos you can watch the reviews, and most of the people who have seen it for a second time have gone from 8 to a 9.
And I'm getting very excited this evening in the UKL, 10 o'clock tonight, The League of Gentlemen returns.
Oh, yes.
So I'm looking forward to that.
The question with The League of Gentlemen is, have they gone 21st century, or have they stayed...
Yeah, they'll have to be
exactly the same.
They'll have to be a little bit more PC with certain things.
Because I've been watching the old series on Netflix, and the season... Stan stuff in season 2 is so close to the knuckle with the
Even season 3, which is a good a year or two later than that, is
I haven't
close.
Got the season 3, I'm sort of midway through season 2, and some of the stuff in season 2... is so close to the knuckle. My brain keeps going, they're never going to get away with that. And you just, the thing is, I've been watching a lot of Christmas comedy from the past, and it's all a lot more anarchic than it is now.
Absolutely, Al, absolutely. And just a week away now, less than a week left now, of the Peter Capaldi era. A little bit sad, but, you know, looking forward to seeing Jodie. But I certainly have loved Peter in the role, Al, so I'm going to be sad to see him go.
I know there's been a lot of people out there who, you know, in the BBC, who haven't thought it was the greatest idea to have Peter Capaldi. I think he's been brilliant. He has had that real sort of gravitas. And I know, you know, it hasn't sold much merchandise or stuff like the BBC want to sell, but I think he's just a fantastic actor.
I think it's just added poignancy that he will be the last actor who remembers watching William Hartnell as a child, you know, the one who was the mega fan. He'd probably be the last one who was a huge fan of the classic series to ever play the Doctor, so...
I think so as well. I think, you know, he is the last person who will remember the part. And I think, I just say no, because I'm really looking forward to this brand new era of Who, but we just don't know. It could go completely up the creek, or it could be absolutely fabulous. I think it's going to be great because of...
Not general fans, isn't it? It's got to capture the zeitgeist of the whole audience, you know. It's capable of doing that. It's Chibnall, it's in good hands.
It's basically got to get hold of people who wouldn't normally watch Doctor Who. It might, you know, that's the thing I reckon Chris Chibnall can do. It's not the fans like us who will watch it, whatever. He's got to get hold of the BBC audience who will just watch a period drama, who will watch the Apprentice. You know, people who watch normal stuff on a Saturday night. That's what he's got to get hold of.
Do you think like the male viewership is going to go up again because Jodie is a very, very beautiful woman, as well as being an incredibly talented actress, but she's got huge screen presence as well. I think that might add to the male dynamic, and a few females who fancy her as well, of course.
I think it's going to be very interesting. I think it will be the whole mixture of men like me who thinks he's stunning, there'll be women who thinks he's stunning, and there'll be the dad brigade who think, oh, well, this is lovely. And I think the ratings will definitely go up for that first hour episode, and we'll see if they keep, because it's in the right... I think it's in the right time era. It's in the end of the year. But I just pray the BBC don't do what they always do. Like, they move it around.
Yes, Al. And it may not be moved around because it's an hour long now. That may help the scheduling.
Yeah, I'm hoping, basically, that it's... Well, it might be too late. Because I think either you put it too early, like 5:30, or you stick it straight after Cassidy. Well, that would be 9, so is that too late?
But have those rumours died down now about it being on a different night, you know, a Sunday or midweek or something?
Well, I haven't heard anything on that one. I think they've gone quiet, but nothing's been confirmed yet about time and where it's going to go. But the problem is, I don't think it'll be as bad in autumn. The reason it got crippled this year is because it stuck it up against a mammoth ITV thing, and I can't see, you know, Britain's Got Talent.
Yes, Al, and just want to wish our listeners, faithful listeners, a very Merry Christmas, and we'll be having a special episode a few days after the Christmas special, we think, looking at a certain two stories, which we'll mention at the end. Are you looking forward to those, Al?
I am indeed, and I hope everybody has a great Christmas, who's, you know, be there with your family, enjoy them. It's only 3 days, so don't end up arguing. It's just a nice time to have lots of drink, lots of food, and enjoy yourselves, basically.
And but yeah, you have time to watch.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, you know, what we're going to do, you know, the next podcast, it'll be fun, because it's going to be, you know, looking at Twice Upon a Time and The Tenth Planet, the new audiobook. So it will be good fun, I think.
And we shall see how closely they are linked when we see the Christmas special next Monday.
Oh, definitely. I can't wait for that.
So, Merry Christmas, listeners.
Merry Christmas.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files will be discussing The Tenth Planet, read by Annika Wills, written by Jerry Davis, and read by Annika Wills, along with our thoughts on the Christmas special and final episode of Doctor Who for Peter Capaldi and Stephen Moffat, Twice Upon a Time. Have a very Merry Christmas, and hope to hear from you then, faithful listeners. You can contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files handle, or search Facebook for our podcast page. Doctor Who Target Files, our Moffat Favourites review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. I Am the Doctor, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for this podcast by YouTube channel user Vale Mystery, V-A-Y-L-E Mystery. Newsround opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files, our Moffat Favourites review, was recorded in Exeter, Devon, England, and Swansea, Wales, UK, during December 2017.